Now, from the Tucson Business Radio X studio in the corporate offices of Stewart Title and Trust, enjoy Friends in the Business with Jennifer English.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Friends in the Business with Jennifer English, proudly brought to you by the legendary 49er Golf and Country Club, where the fabulous Rincon Mountain Grill welcomes guests 7 days a week. It's delicious. Now, from the studios of Tucson Business Radio X, broadcasting live from the offices of Stewart Title on Broadway in Tucson. Live from the city of gastronomy, where conviviality and delicious mean big business, welcome to Friends in the Business. I'm Jennifer English, and in the studio with me today is my good friend Sabrina Regas from the Urban Grove in Tucson, Arizona. In the old days, people would talk about Arizona, and in particular, they talked about the five C's that made up what big business and economy and culture and commerce were. We had cattle, we had cotton, we had climate. We had cotton, and we had citrus and copper, and I can come up with a bunch of other C's that today make up what this community is all about. We have the Hotel Congress, that's another C. Cocktails, cuisine, culture, and one of my all-time favorites, conviviality. Hospitality in Tucson, Arizona doesn't feel or taste like any place else on the planet. That's why when we talk about the Convention and Visitors Bureau bringing groups and events to town, we're no longer just relying on the Gem Show to bring visitors, hundreds of thousands of them, millions really, from around the world for those months in the winter. We are truly becoming an all-year-round, welcoming, hospitable kind of town. Living here in any month has the same essential elements that make this the most delicious place on the planet. So much so that UNESCO has designated Tucson, Arizona, as a city of gastronomy. Now, what that really means is that for 4,000 years, peoples have been coming here to this region. This region on the border, these borderlands, to grow food and make food and cultivate food, to share food, because you can't grow food and not share food. And you certainly couldn't grow food 4,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago and not share food, when food was our medicine and food was our culture and it was our connection. Much like it is today in many respects, it's how we connect. So City of Gastronomy recognizes that this region has been rich for a very long time, not just in the fact that we were able to cultivate food. And we'll talk a little later on about the kinds of foods that naturally lend themselves to being grown and cultivated here. But when you come here, you enjoy way more than just those traditional elements of cattle and cowboy steaks and those delicious citrus drinks. So think juicy steaks cooked over an open mesquite fire and a margarita. I mean, there's a lot we can tell you that you're going to love about Tucson, Arizona, but that's not all. We're going to dive a little bit deeper into who and what makes the culture and business, the big business of hospitality and wellness, of welcoming, of warmth. You know, there's a reason why we're special in the eyes of so many people, because there is a healing, restorative energy that also exists here in Tucson, Arizona, that we can attribute to the lure that drew people here 4,000 years ago. It's that energy that sometimes people give credit to Sedona, Arizona for having that we have plenty of right here, that you don't have in Phoenix and you don't have in Scottsdale and you don't even have it in Prescott or Williams or any other place. We have that healing restorative energy, and we end up with places like Canyon Ranch Spa and Miraval Spa, two of the best spas in the world. Historically, for 20, 30 years, the world recognizes that if you want to go and get better, in a sense, you come to the desert. People came from all over the world when we were settled in a modern sense. If you lived anywhere in North America and you had any lung issues or breathing issues, you might come here. The climate, it was said, would help you and heal you. Today, we've got Victoria Mazes, Andrew Weil, and so many people in an integrative medicine sense who are making this place a cutting-edge, leading forefront place for integrative wholeness and wellness and integrative medicine. But now what we know is that food, as we did 4,000 years ago, is our first medicine and can be our best medicine as well. So when we look at what we eat, where we eat, and who we eat with, and how we celebrate together, and we imagine that all of those elements bring us together in a healthier way, in a holistic way, well, that gives you a sense about why coming together around a table with good people, having not only the hospitality of the welcoming, that's the front end of the big business here, but the conviviality that is cultivated when people come together to share food and drink, that is the real dividend. That is making the big business of hospitality and delicious something we're going to focus on here on Friends in the Business. Now, that's a phrase that you may have heard in advertisements or in common parlance and usage. If you're in the business, well, you get all the benefits of being in the business. If you're in the diamond business, lucky you when it comes engagement time. And if you're in the resort business, lucky you when it comes time to go to one of your sister properties for your own vacation. Or if, sadly, you need a lawyer and you're in the legal business, well, lucky you. But if you're not in the business, the next best thing is to have a friend in the business. And that's where we come in. Each and every week, we're going to invite my friends in the business from all walks of life, from Tucson and beyond, to tell us how we can best enjoy and exploit that insider knowledge, those tips, those recommendations that will make this your go-to source for how to best enjoy and the advantages of being in the business, because it's the next best thing to being in the business yourself. My good friend Sabrina Regas and I first met at the Tucson Festival of Books, where she was volunteering in the culinary tent where I was emceeing Chef Cal Peternel from one of my all-time favorite places, Chez Panisse. He's written a new cookbook, and he and I did our seminar together, and we had a full house. We were cooking, we were laughing, and we were enjoying the conviviality of the session. After the event, we all went over to Yano's Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, where it turns out the person who was assigned to escort him around town was none other than my friend Sabrina Regas. We met, we ended up at Yano's Wilder, James Beard Award winner Yano's Wilder's restaurant on South 6th Avenue, and we all enjoyed a happy hour experience of his. He makes this tuna dish, which is a tuna belly that's crisp, a salmon belly that's crisped up and treated like a taco, except the taco shell is made out of an egg roll wrapper, and it's topped with the most luxuriously seasoned and flavored cabbage and seaweed salad. It's impossibly delicious and one of my all-time favorite dishes. Yanos knows that. And so when any chefs come to town and I find myself there, I'm always encouraging people to try it. And sure enough, that's what we had. And over the course of the conversation, Sabrina and I found that we had so many things in common, and yet, in this one degree of separation town that Tucson is, we had yet to meet. We have remedied that, and we are now fast friends, spending oftentimes many happy days and moments and hours together talking about the delicious world of food. She is the owner and proprietor, along with her family, of something called the Urban Grove. Now, if you haven't heard of the Urban Grove, I want you to imagine back to those days of the five C's we talked about earlier, when one of the core components of the economy and culture of Arizona was citrus. Citrus groves lined the street that is now known as Orange Grove. Where do you think the name Orange Grove came from? Well, there were once lots of orange groves on Orange Grove, and now there's just a few. And my good friend Sabrina Regas and her family have one of them that they've now turned into the ultimate event center and is turning her homegrown business into big business here, delicious business in Tucson, Arizona. She joins me now in the studio. Sabrina, thank you for kicking us off here on Friends in the Business. Boy, am I glad you're my friend in the business.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's so exciting to be here and on this beautiful show.
It's the inaugural broadcast.
The inaugural broadcast. That's right. My goodness. That's so exciting.
Now, there's so many things we have to talk about, you and I, not the least of which you have three amazing daughters, one of whom is in a trained chef, and two of whom are in business together with a company we're going to talk a little bit later about, an internationally distributed product called Barabites, which... Mm-hmm. The first time I tasted them, you knocked me out with them. But all
I'm
that,
so happy.
Let's go back. You're a native Tucsonan. And for people who don't believe that there is such a thing, you are proof that, in fact, some people were born and raised here.
Actually, to correct that, I lived here pretty much majority of my life. But I was actually born in New York.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I know. Everybody thinks I'm a native. My daughters, I have two daughters who are native. But I was born in New York because my father was in the military. So that kind of explains that. I don't know anything where I was born, except I know it was a Air Force base on the shores of Lake Champlain in Plattsburgh, New York.
But you came here as a...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I came here. And then, of course, my father being in the Air Force, we were back and forth. My father married a French woman from Strasbourg, France. She was actually Alsatian. And
arguably the most delicious region of France.
I'm so glad you said that. That's so nice of you because, yes, some of the best chefs in the world come from Alsace. But
one of my all-time favorite chefs of all time, Jean Joho.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Do you love Joho, too?
Yeah, of course.
See, look at this. Every time we get together, we
have
all these things.
We have always something connection. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, and so my father was assigned in France. And, of course, we lived in a village in France. Well, my father was assigned to a Air Force base not far. And I lived in this little village and a place called Luxembourg, which my cousins own a bakery and pastry shop to this day. It's been in my mother's family for the past, well, I guess it's going on 100 years by now. Mm-hmm. She worked there during World War II, and that time was very interesting in that area because that's where, you know, basically overrun in World War II, the Germans coming over. So my mother spoke fluent German also. So growing up there, my first few years, and then, of course, my father received assignments to go back to the United States, and we went to the United States. And, of course, Tucson was always on the agenda. We always came back to visit my grandmother, who came from a place called Topeka, Mexico. And she came here in the, oh gosh, around 1910, to be exact. And then she worked at the Santa Rita Hotel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
so your hospitality on both sides.
It gets complicated. When people ask me, where are you from? What is it? You know, what do you do? And I do a lot of things.
But the threads of hospitality and welcoming on both sides in the hospitality industry run deep. So, I mean, in some respects, it stands to reason, and it's almost an expectation that you would turn the Urban Grove into a place that welcomes.
Really? Because, you know, with the Urban Grove, there's prehistory before I entered the Urban Grove. And, you know, it comes about where my grandmother met this handsome man who was a chef, which really kind of, it all comes together with my family. He was a chef at the original El Conquistador Hotel down the street from this studio. So I was just, you know, thinking, and I'm sitting here listening to you about the history of Tucson, and it's just amazing. My grandfather was just down the street doing his thing in the kitchen of the El Conquistador original hotel.
Let's talk about the Urban Grove and the groves that used to line what is now not only Orange Grove Road, but that whole region of the Northwest mm-hmm. side of town. Mm-hmm. It was big business for a long time.
It was.
Talk about what you know about the groves and the citrus in the Tucson area you took over the Urban Grove.
Right. You know, I grew up here in the 70s, so that was a very exciting time to grow up here. I went to high school here.
You went to South Point.
Yes, I went to South Point grad. And I also went to university here and then NAU.
We should say, because people are listening all over the world, in fact, South Point is one of the well-respected, prestigious mm-hmm. private schools in town. It's renowned for its education and its other programs. So
exactly. I love being in a South Point alumni. It's a very tight-knit group. and then, of course, on to the University of Arizona and graduating from Northern Arizona University up north. We all like to go up north to get a little bit of coolness and snow for Tucsonans. It's kind of exciting to live up there. But, you know, in between time, when I'm growing up here in the 70s, I remember going to Orange Grove Road on many occasions, and I would always ask my father, why do they call it Orange Grove Road? And at the time, there were a lot of citrus trees. It was just a typical teenager asking that question. He goes, because there were lots of citrus groves around here. So, you know, I took it for granted. I said, okay, that's great. And then years later, and only recently, I've learned that the original owner of the citrus groves that started back in the 20s was owned, he brought the citrus trees. He started planting these citrus trees because apparently it's in an area where it doesn't freeze as much. They say it's a thermal belt, but, you know, it's plus or minus. There are still areas, proportions that freeze. But a man by the name of Mr. Reed started to plant citrus trees there. He was a amateur horticulturalist. And he thought this is a perfect place. So he planted all these trees, about 450 acres to be exact. And, of course, everything thrived in that area. And he also threw in some date palms and started the business of the citrus and started to a point where I understand that they even sent out, it was something like almost like a Harry and David's at that time. Mm-hmm. Mailing out citrus to different parts of the United States. And then I also later found out that his son, Gene Reed, yeah, he was the...
Gene C. Reed of the Reed Park Zoo.
Exactly. And okay. A lot of natives do not know this story, but because a lot of us grew up with, what was the park originally named?
Oh, I don't
down
know.
Down the street, Randolph Park.
Randolph Park.
Right. So when people talk about Randolph Park right now, we're dating ourselves. You know, we're all going, gotcha. Okay, we're dating. It's now called Reed Park, and it's been called Reed Park for quite a long time, but we still tend to call it Randolph Park. But it was named after the original Parks and Recreational Director of Randolph, of the park originally, and then they changed the name to Reed Park, and that's where it comes from the Urban Grove area. So I was like, oh my gosh.
That's the connection.
That's the connection.
You are listening to Friends in the Business. I'm Jennifer English, and with us is my guest, Sabrina Regas. She's the owner and proprietress of the Urban Grove in Tucson, Arizona. Sabrina, one of the things the Urban Grove has done is turn this beautiful property that you and your family own and live on. This is your home. Mm-hmm. Into a place that is now becoming renowned for its events. Mm-hmm. People come and have small, medium, and large size events mm-hmm. there, cooking classes, food mm-hmm. demonstrations. The fabulous Chef Dominique, Chef Doma, who recently won the 2019 Knife Fight here, which is a competition amongst all the top chefs in the Tucson area. She comes and does demos with you. Mm-hmm. Talk about the Urban Grove and what you do there now.
It's funny, when the Urban Grove went up for sale about almost going on 6 years, I've always driven by that area, and I've always seen that house in the back with a lined driveway of date palms, and always wondered, what is back there? I want to know more about it, about this certain house, and styled in a California, kind of a Santa Barbara-looking Spanish territorial home, I guess you would call it. And when a sign went up for sale one day, I said, oh my goodness, I've got to see this place. And my daughter was, at the time, and she still is, a real estate agent. And she says, well, you know, Mom, I can arrange and, you know, take a look at it if you're interested. I said, yes, I am. And when she did, we went in there and we met the actual owner of the home, who is now a friend of mine, became a friend of mine because I was so excited about this place. And she was so excited to meet me and my three daughters who were there to tour. My husband was not with us at the time. And so we went around and the owner showed us around, and she truly loved the place where she lived. And just so excited as she started talking to me, our backgrounds, where we lived. And she says, oh my gosh, this is the place for you. I mean, she really meant it because she found out my other daughter was a pastry chef trained. And then about my other two daughters and my background. So, you know, we looked at this and I said, oh my goodness, this is pretty big.
How many acres are you on?
Well, we now own 3 acres in the middle of the city, I guess you would call it now. But the time when I was growing up, River Road was pretty out there.
Right.
Okay. And then Casas Adobes was exceptionally a nice area to visit, but it was far out there. And so...
Where is the Urban Grove today?
It is located right off of Oracle Road and Orange Grove Road. And it's about maybe a block west of Oracle Road. So, yes.
And how many events do you do per year?
At the time, you know, when I started the Urban Grove business, I mean, I always invited people to come in. People were just curious to see this place. I mean, my neighbors, when they see the gates open, there is a gate that faces Orange Grove Road. And a lot of people have passed this property many times. And it's hard to see it because it comes up quite fast. And you have to really pay attention. And I think a lot of people think it is either a special home or for, you know, whatnot, or maybe a business or something. So,
because your proximity to Oracle,
yeah,
might suggest
it's very
that.
Close, right? Exactly.
And so, how many events do you do a year now?
Well, we're going on. I mean, there's just, gosh, I don't know. This last year, we had about, I don't know, very 6, 7, 8. We're still starting right now, so we're, you know, there's the cooking classes too, if you want to include those. And we have.
But you do photo shoots.
Photo shoots, yes. Yeah, so I never think about that as events, I guess, because it's so much fun to do, actually.
Well, I was counting it up based on what I saw online, yeah. And you've got dozens and dozens. You might do 100 events a year.
And it was not even intended to go that direction, but, you know, my prehistory, I lived also overseas. I married my husband and moved overseas. So I was out of, you know, came back on, I was a summer visitor opposed to a winter visitor. And my father's family still are here. And so I did a lot of things overseas. I love archaeology. That was my first major. And I went into social working. I worked as a social worker. So this all comes together. And then I was an educator. And so this all comes together, what I'm doing right now. I like to connect people. I like to show this place because people are so curious. And they're in wonder when they walk in through my gates and see these beautiful date palms that produce delicious dates.
Well, we're going to also say that in a few minutes we're going to be speaking with Lauren Godin from New Orleans, Louisiana. We're going to talk to her in just a minute. But right now, we're going to take a very quick break for identification. You are listening to Friends in the Business with me, Jennifer English. I am thrilled to be welcoming you to my table. Sabrina Regas, can you give us the website for Urban Grove? And are you open for people to come and engage this site? Can anybody come and book an event with you? Are you open to the public?
Yes, I'm open to the public, and I'm very flexible. A lot of people would think it is a wedding venue. No, it's not. It's for all those other people who would like a space to rent just for 2 hours max. And have a business meeting, and I'm trying to make it very affordable for people. So it's all about being flexible and affordability and availability to the public. So yes, they contact me through my website, Our Urban Grove, and they can
And what's the website called?
Our Urban Grove.
Our Urban Grove.
And they can write in and explain what they would like to do, and we can work out all the events that they want to do or whatnot. And again, flexibility is one of my things. And I really do work with everybody. There's a lot of parts to the Urban Grove. It's really hard to say that when they say, how many people can you take? I can take anywhere from 20 people to 200 people because there are so many different places on this grove that you can use for different occasions. So it's really, you have to see it. You have to tour it.
It's essentially describing a resort without a hotel.
Exactly. When people say, you know, why don't you meet us at a local resort? I won't name them, but they're just right up the street from me. I have my own resort. I have the view of the Catalina foothills in the back. I have a pool that's a distance from my back patio. I can sit there and look at the Catalinas. I am not far from restaurants around me. We've got Casas Adobes. We've got everybody around me where I can walk to, actually.
And you've got the citrus,
mm-hmm.
the date palms,
right.
which are fecund right now and just right. dripping with ripening fruit.
Exactly.
You're bringing them to the Five Points Farmers Market.
So
we'll talk
fun.
About that. But we're going to go now to the phones and talk to our friend Lauren Godin, who is an award-winning food writer and well-recognized, respected authority on the topic of the hospitality industry, not just in New Orleans, but around the country. She's classically trained as a chef, which gives her, as a food journalist, the perspective of being able to call BS when someone's trying to pull the wool in a culinary sense over your eyes and using fancy food terms. Well, that doesn't fly with her. Her straight-talking, direct approach and passion and commitment to the industry and especially to the boys and girls who work very long hours, oftentimes behind the scenes and without a lot of the recognition they well deserved and certainly without the pay they've earned necessarily.
Hey, because, Jennifer.
Yes?
I'm just saying hi.
Oh, hi. You want me to stop gushing about you, don't you?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
She's very good at that.
Jennifer, you're so kind, and that was a very lovely intro, and I really do greatly appreciate it, but I am beet red, and it takes an awful lot to get me to blush.
All right. Now, listen, I want to tell people why we've invited you on to the show called The Friends in the Business Show, and as a friend in the business, you are a friend in the business to me. The hospitality business isn't that different from city to city. The core elements of it are essentially the same. The nature of the people in the business are essentially the same. And I wanted to turn to you as my friend in the business to tell us a little bit about the business of the hospitality business today. Because it kind of doesn't matter whether it's Tucson, Arizona, or New Orleans, New York, or San Francisco. What's happening in the industry is happening in the industry everywhere. The trends that are happening everywhere, in part because we're connected by the internet. And ideas are flowing much more freely and pinging off one another in different cities. Chefs are moving more freely than they used to. And frankly, you can get almost any ingredient anywhere. So you're not confined to the geographic location where something is indigenously grown and enjoyed. Talk to us about the business of the hospitality business today.
You know, that's a very broad question. The business of the hospitality business at this moment is, interestingly enough, less about food focus and more about people focus than ever.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find really, really interesting. I mean, when you think about it and you watch and you pay attention to the world around you, what you see is social justice in kitchens being a very important, zero waste being a part of this hospitality industry. Fair wages, even wages, front and back of house kind of merging, and there no longer being that dividing line anymore. The attempt at doing away with tipping, all of these things are very people focused, and social media, which takes, in my mind, the artisan, our chefs, farther and farther and farther away from their craft.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that element of the business to be the most fascinating at this moment. Because people are really putting a lot of energy, time, and energy and time into that.
You know, it's interesting. Let's go back 10 years, 12 years, 15 years. Chefs were pulled away for another kind of media. Magazines, newspapers, radio,
right.
and TV. If you went
right
into
on.
Cooking, there was a time when Food Network was really in its ascendancy, that young chefs saw success as, I have a show on Food Network or I'm appearing on Food Network regularly, and that will be, and here's the key, that will be the thing that drives people to my restaurants to discover my food, to distinguish me, to separate me, to make it so that people want to come and eat my food. and make my restaurant sustainable and a success. They thought that the roadmap to that was the way to go.
That absolutely. People really believed that. And I love food magazines. I mean, I'm an absolute, you know, geek for them. I any kind, the fancier, the better. but I don't, you know, discriminate. I love any kind of writing on food. Mm-hmm. And what I think is fascinating about that is that despite all of that, I never really believed that they were the drivers, the business drivers that some chefs and even some of the magazine people claim that they are, or have been. And that is not a diss by any stretch of the imagination, because I think they perform a very vital and important role in informing us and keeping us kind of trend aware. But I'm not sure that they drive the business. I'm not sure that Food Network, except for the exposure thing, mm-hmm. and you know, it's so funny, that word exposure has kind of gone through its own little time of being popular and not being very popular. And I remember oftentimes people would want to get writers to write about restaurants and food and dining, and they would do it and they'd say, oh, but we don't have any money to pay you, but you get exposure. And my response was, well, people die of exposure. So
we're talking with the culinary journalist Lauren Godin from her test kitchens in New Orleans, Louisiana, for the Straight Stir and Scoop on what's going on in the hospitality industry today. And one of the things that we talk about as a measure of success is just essentially getting butts in seats. And that's the sanitized version of that, right? So every chef and every restaurateur wants to get butts in seats, because if you have an empty dining room, your food costs are soaring and everything else is a mess. You can't survive. And the margins in the industry are slim enough as it is. They begin with
nightmare.
Two strikes against them.
That is absolutely, Jennifer, that's absolutely correct. I mean, and the butts in chairs is the biggest deal of all, which is why we go back to that whole idea of exposure. When you've got citizen journalism, that's the polite version of talking about websites and stuff like Yelp, where people are getting on and reviewing, and then the kind of more current offshoot of that, which is the influencer community, the foodie influencer community, going into restaurants and asking for freebies, or in some cases being offered meals and freebies in exchange for, quote, exposure. But the question does become, does that put butts in chairs? I have yet to find a restaurant who tells me that it does.
All right, let's go back to that era just a few years ago when Food Network seemed to be the thing that was driving a lot of people's motivation for hiring publicists and working outside the restaurant. So again, if you're on a show, say you're on the Today Show, you're on one of the Food Network shows, if you're on one of the competition shows, you're taking days away from your restaurant. Right. It's costing you money, and it's all done for quote-unquote marketing. Can you imagine how much more successful every chef that has attempted to make a mark by doing all those things? If you tallied what the actual cost of all those efforts would be, if you had just spent that on traditional marketing in your local town, city, or market, you might have doubled your business, because it's an awful lot of money to do some of this stuff.
Exactly. And to be perfectly honest with you, I would rather see restaurateurs and chefs take any monies that they might have to expend in that fancy way and turn it into product,
right?
Your people, you know, putting your head down, maybe some equipment, you know, and getting, you know, kind of reinvesting in the thing that brought you here to begin with, which is the restaurant world, your restaurant, and your craft as a chef. I think we've gone and we've redirected and misdirected, in my opinion, people by suggesting that all this other stuff is required to increase business. And I'm just never a person who's believed that. I've always believed, put your head down, keep your eyes and ears open, do your craft. I say it impolitely when I'm talking to my chef friends. They know me for that. I would say STFU, mm-hmm. and pay attention to your work, because we go to restaurants to be restored. That's what the word restaurant means. Mm-hmm. To restore.
One of the things that I want to point out is that when you look back at that time when chefs were doing all of those things, here in Tucson, Arizona, as in New Orleans, Food Network came calling, and several shows have been here, and several high-profile shows have come and done the tour. Everything from Jane and Michael Stern's Road Food books identifying Gus Ballon's restaurant as one of the 10 best breakfasts in America to, most recently, Guy Fieri coming in with Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. And there are maybe four or five places he visited that have big pictures of him up at the front and signed and identifying as, we have come to validate this place for you. So
can I jump in on that for a quick sec? Do you mind, Jen?
I wish you would.
Because Guy Fieri is the exception to the rule. People poke a lot of fun at that cat, and I don't think that that's appropriate personally. And I'll tell you why. He comes to your town. He gives free marketing, free exposure to your restaurant. He's actually eating your restaurant food, working with you, cooking with you. It is almost a guarantee of 10 years of business, because Food Network, one, they air them, and then they re-air them and re-air them and re-air them. And every single time they air those pieces, the gang here in New Orleans, because that's what I can speak to mostly, they get a huge surge in business.
Right.
So while some of these competition shows are just a flash in the pan, Fieri, who comes here and yes, he disrupts because he's making a show. It's one day's worth of business sometimes. And maybe it doesn't even shut down the restaurant for the day, but what the actual ROI is enormous.
Yeah, but Lauren, you're my friend, but my love, my friend, I am not dissing Guy. What I'm saying is he's just one example.
No, I didn't take it that way either.
And by the way, Tyler Florence's food truck race came through town. There are many people who've come into town. Andrew Zimmern comes to town. Stephen Reichlin came and shot here.
None of those guys turned the business the way that Guy Fieri's DD&D does. I can tell, not from here anyway.
Well, but
those guys are brilliant, and I love them for what they do and the fact that they bring awareness. But
let me make my point.
About business.
Let me make my point.
Sure.
So now, but I think this is helpful what you're doing. The point that I'm trying to make is, now you have a small town like Tucson, Arizona, even though we are the city of gastronomy from UNESCO, even though we have all this acclaim, we're one of two North American cities that are part of the Delice Network. We have really famous things here that people come from all over the world to try and taste, including the spa food at Canyon Ranch in Miraval, including the Sonoran hot dogs, including. But now, what do you do when you come here? And you have chefs like Carlotta Flores, who and her family with the El Charro are almost 100 years old, the oldest continuously operating Mexican restaurant in the same family. What do you do when you have places that have been written up like the Hotel Congress and El Charro and all of the other restaurants here? And then you start adding the layering component of things like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives and Stephen Reichlin and PBS and Grilling Down in Tubac and, you know, Jane and Michael Stern and Andrew Zimmern. All of a sudden, as a consumer in Tucson, Arizona, or better yet, a visitor, you've got all this information about all these places that have, this is validated. The whole point is all of these outside sources, these Guy Fieri's and you know, Playboy magazine and the New York Times coming and writing, and all of this comes to validate what we have here. How do you distinguish one from the other? How, when faced with a sea of validation, and I'm not even talking about Yelp, because Yelp is useful in that people will tell you don't go there, but an article in the New York Times doesn't go into the places you don't go to. It only goes into the places you do go to. Guy doesn't do that. Guy Fieri and Diners and Drive-Ins and Dives doesn't tell you where not to go. He tells you where to go. And so what happens when you have 100 influencers that are genuinely influential, like the Food Network, like Bon Appetit magazine and Barbara Fairchild in the old days, like the New York Times? What do you do when you've got 100 choices? How do you know which ones to pick?
You know, I think that's a very complicated question. Today, most people would rely heavily on stars or, you know, what they visually see, how many reviews have there been and how many stars, if you will, depending on what, you know, site you're on or whatever, and you're using your phone and you're looking it up and you're not necessarily relying on necessarily word of mouth, which is a darn shame, because I think the best marketing is word of mouth marketing personally. And unfortunately, a lot of the publications and the people writing for them, I think, are good-hearted. Unfortunately, I also think they are agenda-driven, or can be agenda-driven.
Well, I'm unashamedly agenda-driven, and I'm going to drive my agenda right now before we take our first break, okay?
Yep.
And my shameless quest for delicious... I don't just want delicious, Lauren. You know me. You've known me a long time. You know what I'm after? I'm after irresistible. And any chef or any cook or any host or hostess, if you're making something and it's not quite irresistible, I'm going to tell you, go back in the kitchen and keep working on it until it is. Because those things that deserve our attention, those things that are going to give you the most pleasure and satisfaction, are those things that you eat and drink that are the most irresistible. Now, Lauren, you ready? Hang on to your hat.
Yep.
The Wildcat Burger is a black Angus patty with a chipotle cream cheese. I want you to imagine that topped with flash-fried jalapenos, almost like a little tempura jalapeno. Crispy applewood bacon on a gorgeously buttery toasted brioche bun. Side dish, Vidalia onion rings. Okay. That's my agenda for the day. Thank you very much.
That's a yummy agenda.
I know, right? Well, you know where you can find that is at the Rincon Mountain Grill at the 49er Country Club. And we are proud to be sponsored by them. We're going to take a little bit of a break in the action. We're talking with Lauren Godin, the esteemed culinary journalist from New Orleans, Louisiana. She's going to join us on the other side for another few minutes of conversation. And then we're going to talk Berra Bites, a homegrown product being manufactured and distributed all over the country and soon the world with its roots right here in Tucson, Arizona. If you grew up on the urban grove with gorgeous dried dates, succulent butterscotch-flavored bari dates, the kind that are dripping off the trees right now and available at the Five Points Farmers Market, I want you to imagine, if you grew up with those flavors, what kind of company would you invent when you grew up? Well, you might take those flavors and those textures and imagine dipping them, enrobing them in the most exquisite dark chocolate you've ever had, putting them in a little handy bag, and popping one in your mouth right about now. Whether it's mixed berry or passion fruit, they are so delicious. We're going to talk about Berra Bites right after this. And I am pleased, honored, and really very proud to be here on the Tucson Business Radio X Network. And joining us each and every week will be our friends in the business, including Chef Vanessa Moon, who's coming up next episode to talk about her Old Pueblo Provision Company, the Old Pueblo Salt and Spice Company, and a brand new venture called Sal del Sol. That's right, the salt of the sun. Where do you get sea salt? In a landlocked desert region here in Sonora, Arizona, Sonora, Mexico. Well, we'll tell you that a little bit later as well.
Friends in the Business with Jennifer English. One of the things that the Rincon Mountain Grill is certainly becoming famous for now are the wine dinners. But there's not just wine dinners. There are beer dinners as well. Mackenzie Taylor, how do you do the difference?
So I am so passionate about our wine dinners and our beer dinners, and they are so much fun. Wine dinners are very, very different because they're very white linen feel. We've got six courses, traditional, you know, soup, salad, amuse-bouche, which is that chef's one bite to start the dinner, and pairings that are just amazing and fragrant and different. Our beer dinners are so much fun too because they are much more relaxed, much more casual feel, but partnering with local breweries, Arizona breweries, and so much fun. Really, it's called beer and bites. So it's much more of that kind of snacky feel to it,
okay,
but with an elevated palate.
And yet it's a dinner.
Absolutely. It's a total dinner. You will go home full.
The wine dinners, I have experienced myself. They're very, very nice. And you're rather choosy. You pick specific wines that are going to go exactly with what you're going to cook.
Absolutely. Yes.
On that particular dinner.
Give us
an example.
Well, we research our wines. So we have vendors come in every other week, and we do wine tastings to figure out what families of wine we want to work with or what theme we want to play off of. So, for example, we're doing a Taste of Italy wine dinner, and I'm very excited about that.
Okay. Now, these dinners, by the way, I think they're every 6 weeks, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes, every
so
six
anybody
weeks.
Listening can just call the club and get an idea when the next one is on. It'll probably on the menu on the website anyway.
Yes, it's on the website. It's on our Facebook page. And you can absolutely call the club and get more information for them as well. But yeah, they're really something that we're trying to do more frequently because we have the demand for it. People are excited. People want to do something special. And it's a great date night. It's a great get together with friends. Yeah. It's just a lot of fun. Everybody's really smiling and laughing, and they leave full. So.
And the service, well, I mean, that's good too.
Yes, the service is phenomenal. Really have so many people trained on our wine dinners, and we train them specifically for wine dinners and beer and bites as well. So they really know what they're pouring. They know the flavor notes. They know what we're doing.
Mackenzie Taylor is the executive chef of the Rincon Mountain Grill. It's situated in the 49ers Golf and Country Club on Tankerville Road. On the right-hand side, past the Emily Gray School, on the way to Reddington. You can't miss it. She's also the food and beverage manager. Henceforth, she knows what she's buying, I gather.
I do. I do my research for sure.
That's terrific, because the place is becoming very famous thanks to you. You're doing a wonderful job. And these dinners, well, they can be. They're great date night dinners. They can be a birthday.
Oh, absolutely.
They can be any form. Maybe an anniversary celebration.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Know?
And not only that, but I think there's discounted beverage in as well, discounted wines that the patrons can take home, can't they, from these vineyards?
Yes, you do get a great deal if you order wine while at the wine dinner. So we have all of our vendors from that specific wine company there, and they actually educate you about the grapes and the way that the wine is made, which is amazing. So it's really a dinner that has to do with pairings, but you learn. You leave with more knowledge about the wine that you drank, and then you can purchase that wine and entertain with friends and educate them about it and really know what you're talking about and really know what you're tasting, and that's very, very cool.
So maybe there are more wine drinkers in Arizona than first thought.
I'm hoping so. I'm going to turn some people into wine drinkers. That's my plan.
You're doing a wonderful job, Mackenzie Taylor. Thank you for spending the time with us.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure having you.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Friends in the Business. I am a very lucky person because I have some wonderful friends in the business who each and every week join me for conversations about the delicious world of food, culture, entertainment, and the big business they represent to the region of Arizona, and in particular, Pima County and Tucson, Arizona, where delicious, irresistibly delicious, means big business. And so does hospitality, and so does welcoming. My friend Sabrina Regas is here in the studios with us. Welcome back, Sabrina.
Thank you.
And on the phone with us is none other than my esteemed friend and colleague, the award-winning food journalist, herself a broadcaster, and from whom I've learned much, my soul sister from New Orleans, Louisiana, Lauren Godin. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. Hi, Jen. Hi, Sabrina.
Hi, Lauren. How are you? I've been listening.
I'm well.
I want to reach back into the conversation memory banks. We're talking about the big business of referrals. Is big business driven by big media or social media? Has social media replaced Food Network and its influence? Does Food Network still have an influence? We were using the example of Guy Fieri and Diners and Drive-Ins and Dives. We've turned to my friend Lauren Godin, who is one of the national experts on the topic. Does traditional food media still matter?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you that the short answer is no. Traditional food media, it's a complicated world in which we live, Jen. Tech has become important. It is not the be-all and end-all either. The be-all and end-all is paying attention to your restaurant, putting your dollars, your cents, and your energies into that place to create food for your customers in a beautiful environment, as beautiful as it can be. And that doesn't mean it has to be fine dining, white tablecloth. It can be anything. But pouring your heart and your energy into your restaurant, whatever it may be, and it's like theater in the sense that when you put out really good energy, you get really good energy back. And as the field becomes more and more dense with restaurants, and in New Orleans, it's become really almost like it's almost a joke. Every day you get another press release and another new thing opening and so on. And I'm not sure how we can sustain them all.
But Lauren, I gotta bust in here because what you're telling me doesn't make sense. How can we be cutthroat in competition and still be surviving on a steady meal of good vibrations? Something there doesn't make sense.
Well, it may not in the intellectual brain, right? But the it may not intellectually make any sense. But there, first of all, I don't really think about cutthroat and competitive, because this is food. We all need food to live, and food is also now entertainment. And the thing about it is that everybody has an opinion. You know, as a food writer, I'm watching all the time on social media and people posting. And the other day, I happened to notice that there was a long-haired chihuahua that reviews restaurants. It reviews brunch restaurants. And I threw my hands up in the air, and I said, that's it, I'm done. I mean, they got a dog reviewing restaurants, for crying out loud.
Better than Kim Kardashian's boyfriend.
I got breaking news for you. Why not Kim Kardashian's boyfriend? I couldn't care less. The bottom line is that everybody who woke up in the morning and thinks, do you know what I eat? I can write about food. Even the dog, a long-haired chihuahua named Titus, what it does is it dilutes everything that we do.
You think?
Yeah, just a shade.
And Lauren, where can people find you? Where can we find you and read your stuff? Because I follow you on Facebook, but that's because you're my friend.
Yes, but anything I talk about with regard to the restaurant world, I generally put public. So you can find me as Lauren Gaudin, LaurenGaudin, on Facebook. And when I post it's public, I generally, it's for everybody. So, and then the only other place is I'm Nola Food Goddess on Instagram. And I put a lot of my finds, whether they're here or where I'm traveling or whatever I find interesting in the food and restaurant industry, it goes in there. And that's where you find me. Or you can find me teaching at Delgado Community College, where I'm teaching in the culinary program about menu and social media to our up-and-coming chefs, the next generation. And we have these conversations every day.
Tell us before we let you go about the thing that you're going to expect that we're going to be seeing, tasting, trying, and eating in the next few months, trend-wise. We're having a hot chicken sandwich deluge here. Popeyes did a great job of creating artificial demand, and they waited just a little bit too long because, frankly, every great restaurateur in town that's worth a damn has created an even better hot chicken sandwich than no matter what Popeyes comes up with.
Well, I'll tell you how our perspective here is, because Popeyes is homegrown New Orleans to us, or Louisiana. It's correct. Was invented in St. Bernard Parish by Al Copeland. And interestingly enough, the hot chicken sandwich thing, you know, we're all rather tired of it. And really what we have to credit is Black Twitter for actually popularizing that sandwich. Here, I think, and I think across the world, I think we're going to see a lot of interesting variety. Things come in ebb and flow and trend. Portuguese food, big. I think very simple and clean food, I think, will continue to be impactful. And I think that we will continue to see more casual restaurants continue to take the dollars away from the finer dining temples and palaces. That doesn't mean that they won't exist. There's just fewer of them, and that will make them potentially more special. And I think chefs being very thoughtful to the zero waste thing. And I think it's almost like you want to say everything is trending, because today, as you pointed out at the top of the show, with the internet and with accessibility and Amazon and whatever other big boxes, everything is at our feet and on our table.
And on our doorsteps, unless somebody rips off the package. Lauren Godin, the food writer from New Orleans, Louisiana, thank you so much. Sabrina Regas is here from the Urban Grove in Tucson, Arizona. And we're going to wrap this entire inaugural episode up with a conversation about these beautiful Barabites in front of us, what you've got coming up for the next few months, and where we can find you and your delicious dates. Because one of the things that's been happening in the last couple of weeks, as the dates came fresh and ripened and in season, is chefs are using them, from Anello making a gorgeous salad to our friends at the Coronet and La Fonda La Hermanita. Chef Erica has turned them, along with her team, into these gorgeous little empanadas with crispy bacon and a little bit of chipotle. The dates are everywhere. Where else can we find your dates, and where are you making them available?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of requests for them in between time, and I have a lot of my neighbors that constantly are trying to contact me. And so I try to make them available at least once or twice a week. I broadcast that I'll be selling them right from my Urban Grove, right off of 550 West Orange Grove Road. And I open my gates, I put a sign out there and say, dates for sale, and here they come, and grab a bag of dates. And so I try to make them available as much as I can, and also at the Five Points Farmers Market recently that I have appeared at. And
you and I share tables right next to each other.
We share our tables. We have such a great time. And my husband's so excited to see his dates out there, because we know years before, my husband's a date expert, and he comes from the land of dates overseas. So that's his thing. So he is a retired engineer and businessman, and loving to have my dates out there. So
your girls grew up with these dates. Draw the dotted line for our listeners in the 3 minutes that we have left between growing up with these gorgeous dates and Barabites.
Well, yes, they've grown up with the dates around them all their lives, and they really appreciate food. Again, with our food background and our families. One of them graduated from the University of Arizona in agricultural economics, and the other one, the chef. And one of them, well, the middle child went to visit Costa Rica and started her company down there with a partner and formed Barabites in Costa Rica, the chocolates of Costa Rica. And then they are still in Costa Rica.
Barabites. What are Barabites?
Barabites is a dark chocolate, very good, high quality dark chocolate with a center pureed fruit center. It's all natural, fair trade. And my daughters have developed an amazing, beautiful tasting, snack
Barabites,
product.
And Barabites are spelled Barabites. And you can find them online at barabites.com. It's becoming big business. They're in over 350 stores, retail outlets around the country.
Right.
You've got two flavors here. We've got the mixed berry and the passion fruit and kiwi, both with dark chocolate. It's almost like at the end of a fancy meal, having those little gelées, like the mignardises, like a little gorgeous bit. And it makes it, any meal could finish fancy with a Barabite.
The best part of this, I'm an official taster of the Barabites when they come through. They'll be out with another flavor in the spring, so we'll have a third flavor out. But yes,
and we should tell people that you're going to have, for the holiday season in November and December, you're going to be having events at the Urban Grove, and you've got a new gift shop that's going to be opening up for when you have the event, so people can come and do some holiday gift shopping with you as well.
Exactly. We will have some cooking classes coming up. We'll have some other type of events, so be aware of our events through our website, our urbangrove.com. And also you can see me at the Five Points Farmers Market, and I can update you because we always
are changing. And that's every Sunday at
Five
Points?
Every Sunday, correct. And also if you want to visit the Grove, please come and visit me. Contact me.
And the Five Points Farmers Market is located at the Five Points, at that intersection between South 6th Avenue and 18th, right in the same block as the Five Points Cafe, every Sunday from 9 to noon. I'll be out there. You'll be out there. I'd love to come and have a chance to break bread with you, welcome you, and introduce you to some of my other friends in the business. Until next time, I'm going to urge you to be kind to one another, make food for people you love. And when you get home tonight, do me a favor. Hug your kids and count your blessings. We'll see you next time. This is Your Friends in the Business. and consider me your friend in the business. You can find me on Facebook, and you can always email me at spiritskitchen@gmail.com.
Thanks to the 49ers and the Ringkong Grill, we trust you enjoyed Friends in the Business with Jennifer English.